The ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, the most anticipated festival in the region, will once again excite audiences with nearly 650 performances September 9th through the 20th. From comedy, dance, and theater to jaw-dropping spectacles across 39 venues all around Rochester. Don't miss amazing performances in the Spiegel Tent, including the world premiere of Cirque du Fringe Claws Out, Shot Sphere, Kids Fringe, and more. And direct from Italy, Sphere, a mind-blowing outdoor spectacle, free at Parcel 5, September 19th and 20th. RochesterFringe.com.
Let's take a minute to talk about Joe Bean Coffee, my go-to for great beans here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador, and I regularly brew their coffee at home. A recent favorite of mine is the natural process Colombian Finca Buena Vista coffee from Edwin Zambrano. This coffee won a 2024 Good Food Award, and I can't help but agree with that assessment. My brews have been full with fruity flavors of pineapple, strawberry, and orange, and each cup has brightened my morning. Next time you need some beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester, or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. For our loyal listeners, save 15% off your next order at joebeanroasters.com with code LUNCHADOR. You can also subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule, and never be without great coffee again. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care. That song means it's time for another episode of Just Can't Not. I'm your host, Chris Lindstrom. This is part of our series of preview podcasts for the ESL Rochester Fringe Festival, happening in downtown Rochester from September 9th to the 20th. Go to rochesterfringe.com to find out all the events. Get the app so you can find stuff on the fly. And I have a guest who has an event. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Joanna Lowe. And I'm here on behalf of my theater company, Cup of Joe Productions. We are a Pittsburgh-based theater company, and I am performing a show that I wrote called Widow.
Yeah, and so I saw that, and I'm like, oh, I was setting up for remote recording, and then realized that you were here, because I saw Pittsburgh, and you know, my wife and I are definitely in Pittsburgh at least once a year.
Oh, wonderful.
She sells at AnthroCon in Pittsburgh,
yes.
You know, the big furry convention.
Right.
And, you know, we love it there. Like, what a fun city that's creative and has built itself up over the last, you know, 30 years.
Yes.
Just in a lot of ways, like, you know, Rochester mm-hmm. is starting to reinvent itself.
Right.
10 years later than when Pittsburgh started.
Yeah. I was, when my parents moved me to Pittsburgh, it was dirty and awkward and ugly and I hated it. And I was there to see it transform into a thriving arts community, and also going from pivoting from the steel industry to medicine and robotics.
And a lot of high tech, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's a really just a fascinating contrast of a city because it has a lot of still blue collar ethics.
Very much so.
But now with a lot of like giant money coming
yeah,
in. So
yeah.
it's an odd confluence that I think, you know, Buffalo's dealing with and we're dealing with on mm-hmm. the other side, where we were a very white collar town.
Right.
And we think we're better than we are, but we're still figuring out how to recover. Oh, look at this. That's a pivot. I didn't even know I was going there. But here's the pivot to your show's name,
okay.
which is Widow, which is mm-hmm. happening on Friday the 12th at 4 and Saturday the 13th at 4 at the Memorial Art Gallery at the B&L Parlor.
It's actually 4:45 both days.
Ah, 4:45 both days. And make sure you get your tickets on rochesterfringe.com. Let's talk about the name of the show. Obviously, the name of the show is bringing up something that is a challenging topic.
It sure is.
Let's just dive in.
Okay. Like,
so when you were thinking about coming up with a show to talk about something mm-hmm. like this, how did that process go to decide, yes, this is how I want to portray this, you know, critical moment of life.
Right.
In a show for the public versus in private.
Mm-hmm. That's a fantastic question. And I've been asked that a lot.
Yeah.
As I mentioned to you before we started, my brother is also a founding member of my theater company and one of my biggest supporters. He's also an actor and a director. And he has been a sounding wall and also kind of a lifeguard for me through this process. And he asked me at one point, do you need to write this or perform it? Mm. And I said, yes. For me, maybe I should go back a little bit. For me, the traumatic event that happened in my life stopped everything. It stopped my ability to make art. It stopped my ability to write, to express myself. And that was really my lifeline up until this point. It is what has helped me to survive my life. And when everything was taken from me, and I was mute for about 3 years, not literally, but artistically. And if you can imagine being tortured and not being able to scream, now I can finally, the pieces started moving. I came back with my theater company and did a show that combined an original adaptation of Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, but I blended it with one of his almost unknown stories based on Dickens' own grief story over losing his sister. And so I blended these stories, this beautiful redemption story with Christmas Carol, and this acceptance of grief through this other story called The Haunted Man and the Ghost Bargain, and started to process on an artistic level anyway, and in a public level, because I really haven't been involved in my communities for a couple of years. Yeah. They have been very supportive and waiting for me to come back. And I came back with that. And that was the movement that allowed me to go, okay, it's time to write about this. And I didn't know what that would look like. I just knew that I had to. And to be honest, writing that was the most harrowing writing process I've ever been through. For me, when I write, I relive. Mm. And so this was jumping into the hellscape every single time I sat down to the page. And that's when my brother stepped in and went, if you are not confident that at the other end of this, you'll be able to move forward, is it really worth it being sucked under?
Yeah, and I did want to go back to something you mentioned that, you know, he was functioning as, you know, your bumpers and bumper bowling, your guardrails mm-hmm. for this process. Was that something you knew you were going to need, or did he see it before you did?
Both.
Yeah.
He has anticipated needs of mine that I wouldn't even have thought of, where he'd approach me and say, do you want a person with you? I will be your person. And hadn't even occurred to me that, yes, please. I need a bodyguard. I need a person just in case, somebody to get me out of a room or just be present with me. And I think my subconscious was a lot smarter than I was consciously to bring him in on the process.
Yeah.
Where I was doing it consciously as an artistic sounding board. And then once he was there, I went, oh, my brain did the thing where it knew it needed help and some safety measures. And so, but it made it that much more comfortable. And I needed somebody that I trusted absolutely to go through this whole process with, to dive into the subject of grief. Where can you possibly start in an unending ocean? And so for a 30 to 45 minute show, you know, throw a dart at the board. And like,
I was going to say, you're like, either you're distilling it all into this concentrated density mm-hmm. of a neutron star, or you're picking slices that
right.
Then it's the artistic choices of what slices am I portraying? am I portraying my, the wistful part of, positive remembrance?
Right.
Are you pulling the slices of, pulling the slices of raw emotional pain mm-hmm. and then physical,
right?
the trauma of that? Like, how do you pick which slices to include in like a 45-minute show? Because it has to be just like an endless well.
Right. That was exactly my question. My father is a professor, and I remember talking with him about it. I was like, Dad, I have no idea where to start. And he said, and I'm so glad that he just very simply and very lovingly said, whatever it is that you choose to say, trust that it will be enough.
Yeah.
So I started somewhere, and I went through all of the notes and snippets and thoughts that I had just scribbled over the years and the random little lines that would come to me. I went through the memories and somehow pieced together this very raw, also very funny at certain points.
Yeah.
And of course, these wistful, wonderful memories, because it is, while it is an unspeakable tragedy, I want to share my husband with the world. Since his voice doesn't exist anymore, mine has to count for both of us.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, it's also the difficult thing about anything is that, the people around you, they might have known him as a person.
Right.
And you know him as a full person.
Yes.
Which is flaws and everything, and real flaws, right? We all have
right?
the real flaws and these ups and downs. And there's so many, like, parsing through that is not really what I want to do here. It's more that I'm kind of like almost mentally overwhelmed with thinking about all the artistic choices
yes.
to make
yes.
as part of that process
right.
while you're also still living through it.
Right.
Like, that's the part that's overwhelming my brain is like, you almost just have to go blah, and then maybe pick some pieces
right.
and find a through line that is not necessarily what you originally thought. So, and I just said a lot of words.
No, but I'm following.
Because what I was trying to figure out is when you started writing, did you already know you were doing a show, or did you decide you were doing the show partway through? And where were you, like, when you were picking all the pieces, was that part of figuring out, yes, I'm going to do this? Or was that already, yes, we're doing it to start?
So the moment I found out what happened, the moment I found out that my husband was killed, there were, of course, several huge, overwhelming thoughts. And one of them was a very bitter realization
yeah.
that at someday I would make art about it to survive it. I hated that, but I knew that that's what would happen. And
that's also the core of the people that I know in my life, including my wife,
mm-hmm.
that's what they have, right? That is the venue. It is that vessel of creative expression, and it's vibrant.
Yeah.
And vibrantly painful and vibrantly
yes.
joyous and
necessary.
And it is for those that have that as the needed expression.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a choice. It's a need.
Yes. And when I got to the point where my voice had started to come back, when I started being able to walk through the rooms again of my colleagues and my friends, and when I found out that I could start making art, at least to some extent, again. I knew if I did not write and perform this show, I would never really live again.
Mm.
I would just survive. So in a very, very real way, this show was necessary. And this is the show itself. I'm not screaming. But I feel like this is evidence. This is my scream into the void. An answer to something unanswerable.
Yeah.
And you asked about. So I knew from the beginning there would be a show, and there have been aspects of it that have clicked in. Just, oh, I know I'm going to be walking in wearing a wedding dress, and what a gut punch that will be for everyone.
You're not kidding. Mm. Especially since it's not like they don't know the name of the show coming
in. Exactly. Exactly. So we're all starting off being gutted.
Yeah.
And then it really was. It was just kind of a blah, like you said, out on paper. And I started sifting through. And my brother, one of the most valuable things that he said in this process was, we need the audience to be aligned with you.
Mm.
And so when different things, because people will say the dumbest things to you when you're going through the worst time in your life.
It's inevitable.
It is. And they mean so well.
Yeah.
And they are some of the most idiotic things. And so I built into the show 5 things not to say to a widow.
I was going to say, like, one, that's also super instructive.
Right.
For those of us that sometimes the only thing I know how to say, and it's the real honest truth to people, is like, really, like, I wish you the best of luck during the arrangements and during those things, because that's the only thing I really know how to say to people. But it's those things, like, the first question that popped into my head is, do you think it's not just inevitable, do you think you can actually teach people to say the right thing?
Yes. And that was one of the things. It was an opportunity in just because in the darkest moments, of course you find the most absurd things.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you know, and my humor is darker than ever now. So we built in these absurd moments, you know, okay, we're bringing in them to the brink. And then we're going to give everybody a good laugh at some of these absurdities. But also, because I have had people that love me so much and say such drivel and platitudes and just idiotic. I mean, I don't want to give away anything in particular, but like, yes, that you would believe the things that would come out of people's mouths.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, this is a humorous thing, but it's also a way to teach with humor. And while this show was absolutely what I needed, what came out of it was I had strangers. I had some of my closest friends who have been with me in all of this come up to me after the show and thank me for teaching them how to love me better.
Yeah.
And I know that they will take these things away with them to help other people who are grieving, and will remember these things when grief knocks at their door.
Yeah.
And that was a really surprising and incredibly valuable aspect of the show that I experienced as well, where I'm like, I know I did this for myself, but wow, this has been really valuable for other people too, and to align with them.
Yeah. Well, and that's that extended community that's hard to quantify, because you have your named circle that is close.
Yes.
And then you have the extended community of things that have, you know, the tendrils off from being a creative person, from being visible in the public, for doing things. That those are things that are hard to quantify the reach of something like that, and having that positive reach in a way that, you know, might not have been originally intended, but having that be an outcome, like, what a great thing.
It was incredible. And especially there's the bizarre aspect of being a public person in my communities and then having to find a way to come back out again.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would have ever been comfortable coming back out without having a stage to say, you know, literal or a figurative one, to say, this is who I am and this is what happened to me. And now I can walk through rooms again. I can meet people in my community again. And I started to make art publicly again.
Yeah.
So that has also been a strange aspect of the evolution of grief, being a public figure and having these massive communities and basically being in hiding, being a hermit for a while, and like, how the hell do you come back from that?
Yeah. And it's the process of, you know, it's two letters and one word that is like it's the smallest version of it, but it's the process of being okay. And it's not being great. It's the process of being okay.
Right.
What I'm kind of wondering is, so you mentioned you've done this on stage already. How long have you been doing this show, and has it changed since the first time you did it?
Yes. So I wrote and performed it in March with the Pittsburgh Fringe Festival.
Okay.
And the Pittsburgh Fringe is now an official part of the Fringe organization, which is Edinburgh Fringe.
Oh, awesome.
And so I was reviewed and I am officially a recommended show, and that reviews on the UK website, which is incredible. And it went beautifully, and it was genuinely the most terrifying thing I've ever done. But it broke me open in a way that nothing else could. And I mean that in the best possible way. I remember the show being at an end. I'm throwing on sweats, coming out, taking away the stage because the next Fringe show is coming in right after. I'm wiping away tears. Right,
you're doing like stagehand cleanup work while you're emotionally like splayed on stage.
Yes, exactly. Thank you for coming to the show. Strip, strip, strip. Take away the table. Okay. And I'm like wiping away tears in sweatpants and, stopping the music.
While you're doing roadie work.
Right, exactly. And the thing is... it was absolutely okay. I was meeting my friends with smiles.
Yeah.
They were meeting me with tears. And of course, I've got an endless well of tears. We can do that all day. But to be able to come off of that, I did not imagine that I could come off a stage doing that with a smile. And I've found that again. So this really has been transformative for me. But as an artist and as a performer, I'm a spoken word artist as well. And I never approach the word and the stage without being sincere. And so that means approaching it from where I am now. And where I was in March is not the same place as where I am now. Having performed the show, having grief evolved. And so next year I'm hoping to take this on to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival next summer.
Oh, that's what an ambitious goal. I love that.
So that was a part of my, like, here's the plan. And it was for me and it was for grief. I write and perform this show for Pittsburgh Fringe. I play it out to other fringes throughout the year, whatever I can find, with the eventual goal of being at Edinburgh Fringe in 2026. And I don't know what the show will look like then, because I'm going to have to continue to evolve it. And I'm in the middle of making edits where I'm like, is this the exact truth anymore? Do I need this introduction anymore? What else do I need to add in order to flesh it out? So it's going to be a constantly evolving show.
I mean, the whole thing is evolving.
Yeah.
And it can't not.
It has to. Exactly.
It has to change. And especially when you said, like, this is part of being present. This is part about really, it's the honesty of the performance. It's the honesty of what the show is. And unfortunately, we do have to cut off because I have other interviews. I really would love to sit and talk about this for a lot longer, because I am, one, this has been a delight. This has been
thank you so much.
Just
thank
so such an interesting conversation, and I am definitely going to make it out for one of these two shows at 4:45 on September the 12th or 4:45 on the 13th at the Memorial Art Gallery at the B&L Parlor. Grab your tickets on rochesterfringe.com for the show Widow. Thank you so much for coming over and having this conversation. It means a lot to me.
Thank you.
And I'm really excited for everybody else to see this and really be present for something that, you know, is going to give you the chance to reflect on other things.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time. And we'll be back next time with more on Just Can't Not on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.